Pawn of Anxiety? This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the thought for today. And the thought for today is, are you a pawn for anxiety? Are you letting anxiety rule your life? Are you letting anxiety make you unhappy? Are you letting anxiety do its wonderful program with you? I looked the word up in the dictionary and in the thesaurus and so forth. Anxiety is foreboding, strain, fear, concern, worry, inconvenience, bother, annoyance. That's what anxiety is. And anxiety gets to all of us far too often because we feel we have to do the things that we set out for ourselves to do, and in the process, we don't do them. In the process, we get sidetracked, and we go to do other things, and then we come back to do what we started to do, and then we get sidetracked again, and then we get sidetracked again. So, what are we saying to ourselves? We are saying to ourselves that we don't like to have programs that control us and manipulate us. We don't like to have programs that we cannot follow because they're too precise, they're too demanding. Well, in that little area, let's play for a second. All of us are old enough to go to the university, and we do go to the university. And at the university, the professors come in and say, here's a program, here's a program, here's a program, and they usually offer you 10 minutes to run from one building to another, or one class to another, one course to another. And so the lectures are usually, the time spent in class is usually 50 minutes. That gives you 10 minutes to go between the next class. When the bell rings, everybody out into the next class. Now, even if you don't have a class, you're out. Because when you do university work, you oftentimes have classes scheduled. Every Wednesday you have this, and every Tuesday, and then every Monday, and sometimes you have three classes a day, and then sometimes you have no classes a day, or just one or two. So you have a rather open schedule. But that freedom destroys you. That freedom destroys you unless you are a person who handles the things that you should be handling. You know? And now, let me do that. So, it's sugar. So she's got sugar on her cheek, and I was wiping it up. Now, that freedom can destroy you because of one thing. You think, oh, I got all the time in the world. At night I'll do my studies, and this here I'll do then, and that I'll do then. And if you are not an organized person, you do not do well in school. I will ask you this question, and I want you to think the answer in your own mind, because I'll tell you the answer too. Have you ever seen a more idiotic world than the one we're living in? What is the average grade in school? Middle. Not top, not the bottom, middle. We are expected to be the middle. We're expected to be the average. A few will excel and a few will not do well, but we're expected to be the middle. The grade C, or 3 as it is in the 6-point schedule, or 5-point, whatever it is, 4. The grade C in the middle, and what would it be in the middle of the 4-point schedule? 2.5? Yeah, okay. So, you see, wow. That means everybody, if you even open the book and pay attention, you should pass the course beautifully and get through just beautifully. And a lot of kids, they don't even attend the classes. They just read the course books, and they take the tests and do very, very well because they're not influenced by the teacher and the teacher's way of presenting it. Of course, they don't have that opportunity. They forget they just have the book, which is another teacher's way of presenting it, and then they don't have their own professor's way of presenting it. They'd have two ways of receiving it and be even more illumined and enlightened by their course. So, okay. In a university setting, you have to be there on time for your class. or else you are, if they take attendance, then you are so many times and you're out of the class. If you're not going to attend the class, then you're out. Now, many schools have non-requirement of classes. You don't have to attend classes. You take the examination at the end, and if you pass, good for you. If you don't pass, too bad. Do it over again, you know, or get out. It's, you see, can you go to a school where you have the freedom to not go to class? That takes a lot of courage and a lot of stick-to-itiveness, a lot of one-pointedness. If you don't, you won't pass your tests. You won't pass your courses. You won't. You see, a lot of students, and I would say the majority of students, need to be prodded along. Come on now, get your lesson done. Come on now. Ellen knows all about that. Ingeborg knows all about that from working with our students and prodding them. Come on now, we haven't heard from you for a week now. Where's your lesson? Where's your lesson? Get it in. And we should really not care at all, because this is a master school where people come here because they want what we have, and they want to get it through the process that we offer it. Now, if you don't want to be in the monastery, if you don't want to be here at the university and work full-time on your mastership with one point only in your mind, and that is to reveal the divinity that's within you, reveal your mastership to its totality, then you shouldn't be here. And as you know, in a school of that quality, there are very few students, very few students. You take the masters in India who are fantastic people, utterly fantastic people. And they have 8, 10, 12 students, that's all, that come and live with them, that live with them. And the master provides the food and the lodging, you know, whatever it may be. And they come live with them right there. And they're trained every day. Very, very tough. They spend hours in meditation. They spend hours in introspection. They spend hours in learning to read their Bible, learning to read in Sanskrit as well as in English or whatever they're using, you know. And then at night, they don't go to town and have a blast. They don't run into town. They don't have cigarettes. They don't have a liquor. They don't have anything there. They eat simple meals of rice and whatever it is, because that's probably what they only had at home too. But they eat very simply. And they clean up the place. And everybody is given assignments of things to do. And they do it. And they go down to the river and wash and do their ablutions. And you see, we think, man, it's so tough here. It's so tough here. We've only got 2 swimming pools, you know. And we don't realize we have paradise here. And what we do is we take it for granted, and we also don't take care of it. We don't take care of it. When you go by the swimming pool up here by the retreats, and you see the seiner there, and you see a bunch of dead bees in the pool, do you scoop them out and throw them off to the side? Or do you just say, oh, there's some dead bees in the pool, and go about your way, you know? When you see a piece of paper floating around, you pick it up. When you see some knapsacks and bottles of water on our property, do you put it off of our property, or do you put it in the trash, or whatever you do? You see, at all times, this is your paradise. This is your spiritual home. This is your spiritual growing place, and we want to have it as perfect as possible at all times. Now, if you're a master, you will never see bottles of water. You know, you'll never see knapsack. You'll never see anything out of place. Does that mean it's not out of place? That's right. It is not out of place. But if you are a student and you are developing your master consciousness, you will still see things out of place. See, you'll be judging people. You know? You'll be judging what you see. You'll be possessed by the things that you're learning. And see, these can all do nothing but create in you anxiety. And the biggest anxiety is, like Jesus had with his men, he said, oh, ye of little faith, oh, ye of little faith, I have asked you to do these simple things, and you couldn't do it because you did not believe in yourself. And so then he showed them how to do it again, and they went out, and he showed them how to do it again, and again, over the 3 year period, he really worked those guys. And then when he left, many of them still couldn't do it. But they believed in the teaching. They believed in the philosophy. It was not hard to believe in. It's good stuff. So they went after it. They continued. And you don't hear anything about most of the disciples, because most of the disciples quietly were working on their own path. You know? Just a few. And you really don't hear about the disciples, if I may be so blunt as to say that to you. Because those were not the disciples who wrote those words. Those were people 50 years after the disciples had even died, you know, from old age. And they wrote these things. And they, all right, let's take a look, just digressing for a moment. Where did Paul get all of the knowledge that he got? Paul never knew Jesus. He never knew the master teacher, but he had a direct line on the road to Damascus. Pow! You know, knocked him off his horse. He's blind, couldn't see a thing. And it says, "Why do you persecute me?" As Jesus was talking to him. And he said, "Follow thou me." And so Paul became one of his greatest benefactors to the foundation of Christianity. Now, where are you? Are you going to let something like blindness stop you from following your spiritual path? If you do, you're very silly. You don't have to stay blind. Paul didn't, you know. You don't have to stay with limitations of any kind. But the limitations are what we build up in ourselves. And symbolically, Paul couldn't see because he could not recognize the spiritual reality that was all about him. But the moment he did recognize it, his sight came back, you notice? So this is what happens to us. When we stop playing the game of thinking that it's too tough, it's too hard. If ever anything we do is too hard or too tough, stop and look at it and say, why are you so tough? Why are you so hard? Why is this experience or this condition or this circumstance too tough or too hard? And when you look at it, you say, okay, that's for real. Then am I going to continue doing just like I'm doing and maintaining it hard? Or am I going to make a drastic change? If you're hitting your hand with a hammer and it hurts, when you stop, it stops hurting. And wouldn't it be not normal or proper to stop hitting yourself with a hammer? And now, right now, all right, if here in campus, Ellen and I go over the budget regularly, if we're spending too much money, cut it out. Cut it out. Cut out those things that are too much. And if we don't cut it out, then naturally we're going to keep on spending. Keep on spending. And principal goes down in the drain. And pretty soon there's no principal left. And then we're operating from another point of view. You know, just from another point of view, and it's silly. We should be speaking our word that we are independently wealthy. We should be speaking our word. But Ingeborg cannot believe that, because Ingeborg knows how much money she has coming in from the German and Italian government to support her each month, and that she contributes to the university and the monastery here as part of her program. And she does very well. But you see, that's the limitation. And that's not the limitation. The unlimited idea of the allness of the universe is yours. I mean, you know, you're not stupid. You got brains just waiting to be revealed to you. And it's revealed to you when you start realizing that you're limiting yourself by saying, that's how much money you have coming in every month. Don't ever do that. Because the Italian government and the German government can go kaput, you know, and then you don't have that. So you don't want that either, do you? Okay. Now, let's work on this. Let's work on this. Let's recognize that if we need to reassess ourselves, let's reassess it. If we need to make some changes, let's make some changes. And if magazines keep coming because they renew them on our credit card, Let's cancel those credit cards and get a new credit card. And that way they haven't got a credit card to use, the number. You understand, Ellen? I mean, how else are you going to get them to stop it? You know? Just change the number. And then it's not a valid card anymore. They can't charge on it. And, you know, when you get a book by mail and you give them your credit card, they sometimes keep doing it. And other things. And some of these little things that we once thought were fine and we ordered one time, and they keep coming and they keep recharging themselves and we don't even know it. We want to go through all that stuff and start cleaning up all this little garbage and perhaps the big garbage. But we don't get anxious about it. Yeah. If everything ended, what difference would it make? And if we're successful, by whose standard? I am successful already. Did you know? Are you successful already, Ella?
Yes.
Oh, you bet you are. Ingeborg, are you successful?
Yes, yes.
I'm glad you said yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Or yes, yes, at least. And what about you? Are you successful?
Yes.
Wonderful. Now, what do we do? Why should one be anxious when you're successful? And you don't need to be more successful. You just need to be successful in any way that you think is important to be successful. Now, Ellen has a family to support. She's got 12 kids, and she's got a husband that doesn't earn a dime, and she's got to make enough money to feed all this family. But you know what Ellen does? Ellen comes home from work, and if the house isn't cleaned, she takes her tennis racket and goes out and plays with the girls. She doesn't care. And she goes to work in the morning with nice clean clothes that she made clean, and her family doesn't take care of it. She says, take care of it. You're old enough. You can handle that yourself. And if her husband doesn't do his part, that's too bad. Yeah. But you shouldn't go to play tennis. You should be here being a mother. You should be here washing and cooking and ironing. And well, I work all day long and work all day long. And I have a night job and work at night. You know what I mean? You cannot do enough for those who are not willing to do anything for themselves. You cannot. You cannot help those who will not help themselves. All you can do is to be yourself and have fun. And look at them and say, hey, you're having fun doing what you're doing, aren't you? You're hitting your hand with a hammer. You're having fun, aren't you? Kind of cuckoo, but you're having fun. And this is what people do. This is what people do. They play that game. We must not be anxious for what others do. We must not let this anxiety get to us. One of the major illnesses in the world today is anxiety. Anxiety. And all of us are subject to it if we allow ourselves to think that we have to live somebody else's life. If we allow ourselves to think that we have to run somebody else's world. And we don't. Now, here at the monastery, we have lots of property here with a lot of money. We have money in the bank. We have money that comes in all the time. What? Mm-hmm. We do. And for us ever to think we're poor is the stupidest thing in the world. We are not like Bill Gates, perhaps. We're not like some people who have a lot of cash flow. We have cash flow, but it's specific. We know what we're doing, don't we, Ellen?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
Yeah, she laughed at that one too. But we know what we're doing, and we do it with wisdom. If I give you $100 and I say, go to the store and buy this, 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 and then with what's left over, then you can buy this, 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 this. But if you buy this, 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 before you buy this, 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 then you won't have money necessarily to buy the important things that you were sent to buy, and the secondary things come secondary. But we just have to learn our priorities. We have to learn our priorities. See, here, we do a lot of little silly things here on the campus. For instance, we air condition the house for the dogs. And, I mean, that's stupid. Take the dogs over to the Hermitage and turn the air conditioner on and let them be there. You air condition just one room. So we're gone, and they got the yard to play in there, and they have the house to be in, if such need to be. And you're shaking your head no?
I did not let the air conditioner on the other day.
Ellen, don't fight it. And I'm just saying, what we want to do is to use real good judgment in how we're burning up our fuel bill, you know, how we're burning up the heating of buildings and the water. Ellen and I just determined not to fill these houses with people, because then you got to air condition them and you got to heat them. Rather use the retreats here, which are just small areas which are adequate for whatever is needed. And when larger number of people come, we put them in the bigger buildings. But our program has been not properly handled, because many people, majority of people, pay for staying with us. You know, they, there's a fee to maintain the property while they're here, and they pay it, and they pay it lovingly and generously. But sometimes it doesn't work out that way, and sometimes there's a need to do it differently, and we do. So, anxiety. Are we a pawn of anxiety? Are we letting it push us around? Are we letting us destroy our stomach? You know, are we letting it destroy everything about it? I walk with Rex every morning. This morning at 3:30, we were out walking the path and just having a wonderful time. And first I gave Rex a big hug. I just snuggled him and grabbed a hold of his chest and just rubbed his chest and saw him what a good boy he was and what a fantastic guy he was. And then snuggled him behind his ears, you know, and he just loved that and he just wanted it. And then I started to walk. Well, that was not acceptable. He wanted more loving. So he took the leash and he pulled me back. He said, no, just a minute, you're not done. And so then I walk up by the meditation bench up there, by the Om prayer bench. And as I come there, he comes to me and he says, come on now, some more loving, some more hugging. And then he'll take the leash and he'll pull it down. He'll put his nose in my hand. He'll do everything to get all the snuggling that he wants. Now, is he foolish? Hardly. But I do have to suggest to him that we're on a walk. And he comes along just fine. But the point is, we have to get our priorities in order. There's a time for snuggling, and then there's a time for working. And there's a time for doing things, like we get after Ingeborg. She thinks that she is Arnold Schwarzenegger. And I haven't... yeah, she's got pretty good muscles here. But she's not Arnold Schwarzenegger, right?
I'm not, no.
You're not, no. Yeah. And you don't want to be either. But the thing is, Arnold Schwarzenegger, who knows? I don't know. Maybe Arnold's a weakling. Maybe he just got a big body build and a weakling. We have one of our students, Rhonda Joyce, who comes here. I always want to say Rhonda Fleming. But Rhonda Joyce, who comes here, and she's a super girl. And she works out in the gym every single day for several hours. And I say to her, Rhonda, why don't you have some muscles here? And she shows them off, and there's nothing there. And and then I say, Rhonda, help us lift this table. Rhonda, help us lift this piano or whatever. We do move pianos and tables and things like that. And she hasn't got any muscles. She has no strength. She's at the gym every single day. Now, she is giving herself a false impression. She, you know, playing with Rhonda for a minute here. Rhonda is a slim, lovely lady, but she has a brain that's as big as the United States. You know, her brain is just a massive chunk of information and magic and all that good stuff. And she plays at the gym. What she would be well worth doing is playing on the computer, playing on something that uses her brain, maybe reading her courses again and again. And I don't know, has she finished the last one or anything?
The thesis, the dissertation.
Oh, that's right. She's still doing her dissertation for her doctoral. And why is she taking so long to do it? Because she goes over it again and again and again to make it perfect. And I said, Rhonda, just send it in and it'll be perfect. And so the big thing that we're doing is to work with people to help them find themselves, find their spiritual reality, find their divinity, and then take it and go with it. If they want to remain associated with us, super. If they want to go off and do their own thing, super. They're totally free to do anything they want to do. However, what we want to do is to be a blessing to them as they're walking their spiritual path, opening up the inner doors of themselves. And this is what we want to do to ourselves. If we ever allow ourselves to be loaded, overloaded, underloaded, loaded in any way with anxiety, we're cutting ourselves off. Because I guarantee you, any person that takes anxiety and chews it day after day after day is soon going to be either an idiot that is mentally unstable, or they're going to die. Because anxiety destroys. It kills. It kills. Anxiety is the foundation of cancer. Anxiety is the foundation of any illness, because we're worried. If instead of that we say, I live in my
idea, spirit, mind, and body.
Oh, you do know it. Again?
I live in my idea, spirit, mind, and body.
Once again.
I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body.
I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. And all is
in divine order.
All is in divine order. When you say all is in divine order, you can't worry, you know? Because if you're worrying, then you don't believe what you're saying. So start believing what you're saying. All is in divine order. Ellen, are you a brilliant woman?
Yes.
You sure are. Ellen, are you a humble woman?
Yes.
Ellen, are you a successful woman?
Yes.
Ellen, are you loved by everybody in the entire universe?
Yes.
Even people you have no idea?
Yes.
Ellen, does your family think that you are the most brilliant being they have ever met?
Yes.
Do they think that living in your world is a privilege and an honor?
Yes.
Ingeborg, same goes for you?
Yes, yes.
All the way?
All the way.
And everything works out perfect?
Yes.
And all this anxiety?
Everything works perfect when I am clear in my mind.
Ooh. Everything works out perfect and I'm clear in my mind. Hang in there, pussycat. That's the way to fly. Right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, should we aim over that way too?
Also.
Also? What should we ask him?
That he...
Come.
What he likes about himself.
Ah, cool. What do you like about yourself, Mr. Douglas?
Everything.
Well, that I will not accept. What do you like about yourself? If you don't like everything about yourself, you don't belong here. But what is it that everything is? Are you a brilliant person? Are you a happy person?
Yes.
Are you a well-built person? Do you have a good mind? Do you have a good body? Do you have a good spirit? Are you well connected with your divinity?
Yes.
It's all in the...
My thinking ability is great. My thoughts.
I feel.
Yeah, that we get when I do the I put it on... what did I put it on?
Fun.
Conference, and then it reaches over here. And when I have it on just dictation, then it just goes in the central microphone here. Okay. Your thoughts are pure. Your ideas are pure. Your world is pure. Your body is pure. Your body is pure.
Yes.
Your body has no desire for anything that might be a distress to it, right?
No negativity. Nothing.
And all you drink is pure water. Not this Coke. Not this soda water, not coffee, not tea, not all that other sort of junk. You just drink pure water.
Yeah, sometimes.
Well, you see, that's part of the game, and it's okay. But we're not asking people to become a saint overnight. Maybe in 2 days, you know, but not overnight. So keep that in mind. Keep that in mind, that you are good, or else you wouldn't be here. And you want the program we have, or else you wouldn't be here. Because what you liked about me when you first met me was the program, because
right.
I live the program. And people sometimes say, oh, I want you here, but you're a good person and you're a nice person, I like it, but I don't want the gist, because the gist, I just don't want the gist. And I say, well, the gist is me. The gist is me. I check everything that goes into that gist. And if that gist is not saying the philosophy of the university, it doesn't get in there.
Right, it's your words.
Yeah, it's my words and others who are writing it, but I check it. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Make sense? Okay. Make sense?
Yes.
Do you love
Not
me?
Not only makes sense, that's the truth.
True. Thank you. Grip like a dynamo there. Okay. What have we done with anxiety today? This foreboding, strain, fear, concern, worry, inconvenience, bother, annoyance. We have erased it. We're now going down easy street, loving ourselves, loving everything we do, loving every person that comes into our world. And if anybody comes into our world that shakes us up a little bit, we have to look inside. Whoops, why am I being shook? It's me that's being shook. I'm not looking at them and seeing their purity. I'm looking at them and seeing something less than perfect. So I better change my own inner thinking. Can you handle that?
Yes.
Okay. Go for it. And so much for pawn of anxiety. I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, because you're wonderful. And I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you.
I love you. Thank you.